Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
She knows agriculture. She knows the outdoors. What a good fit to be the head of the Montana Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, especially as we know that, you know, agriculture and our farmers and ranchers are so important when it comes to wildlife habitat and relations with sportsmen across the board. Anyway, great to have Christy Clark, the director for the Montana Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, with us to kick off this show this morning. She's a fifth-generation rancher from Shodo, Montana. Director Clark, great to have you on the show. How's the new job going so far?
Well, good morning. Good morning, Aaron. Good morning, Montana. It's going great. And, you know, weather like this makes me grateful I'm not a rancher today, right?
you don't want to have the shovel out there breaking up the ice to get the water flowing, huh?
It's nice to be in a cozy, warm office. I'm not going to lie.
I hear you on that one. Whenever I talk about the weather and I'm like, oh, it's so great to have all this snow. I know there's people on the other end that are like, yeah, easy for you to say as you sit in your little heated studio this morning.
Right, right. No, it's great to be a part of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. I'm thrilled to be the director appointed by Governor Gianforte in December. And, yeah, just, you know, getting my feet under me. It's busy here.
In addition to being a rancher, you served in the Montana House of Representatives for three terms, and you were also the director for the Montana Department of Agriculture prior to this role. How is it similar? How is it different?
Sure. And, you know, when the governor contacted me and asked if this is something I would be interested in, we started to really talk about the synergy between agriculture and fish, wildlife, and parks. And the more we talked, the more it made sense. In agriculture, we have to balance our resources. And, you know, ranchers and farmers are the original conservationists. And so they're very keen in taking care of their land, taking care of the wildlife, and managing all those resources. And then you flip to fish, wildlife, and parks, and managing those resources goes hand in hand with working with people that are private landowners. And private landowners know innately it's part of managing their land and stewarding their land is managing the wildlife, the habitat, and all the things that go with it. And so in the bigger picture, it's a perfect synergy. And I get that question a lot, like, well, you're from agriculture. What do you know about fish, wildlife, and parks? And it actually, there's an awfully lot of overlap.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, there's always been attempts in the past to divide, you know, the ag community from the sportsman community, and oftentimes they're one and the same. I mean, I'll be at the Safari Club Montana chapter banquet here, in about a month, and it's like the room is filled with people that work in agriculture that are also outdoorsmen as well. They just go hand in hand. You're exactly right. All right, well, how is the Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, what are they looking at with the legislative session underway right now? Plus, what about the new president in Washington? How's that affecting things? That and more next.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, great to have a quick few minutes here with Christy Clark, the director of Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. Director Clark, it's got to be just a sea change overnight going from a Biden administration now to a Trump administration. Hopefully we'll get some good news on grizzlies and a whole bunch of other stuff here pretty soon. What are you seeing? What are you hearing?
Well, I can tell you, Aaron, we were very, very disappointed when the petitions to delist the grizzly bear were denied. That was, you know, that was a gut punch for us. Coming from a ranching background, I had no shortage of grizzly bear conflicts, and grew up in the Rocky Mountain front. Shodo is, you know, well known for being grizzly bear country, and we worked hard to work, you know, to color inside the lines, thinking that, you know, we're going to see delisting. It's coming is what we kept hearing. And then January 8th got the call that they had denied all the petitions to delist the bear. And I really felt like they had moved the goalposts on us. And my heart goes out to ranchers. My daughter's ranching on our place up in Shodo with her family. And I mean, we've done everything right. And then to get this gut punch that, oh, we're going to change some things. And now we're going to look to have, you know, grizzly bears delisted, you know, as far as Seattle. So I'm very disappointed in those decisions. But on the other side of that, new administration, fresh start, and looking for some relief in that sense.
Yeah. No, I think we all are. Yeah. The predators that have been unleashed, you know, on our lands with regard to grizzlies and things like that. It's so symbolic of how the past administration also unleashed these predators in the form of criminal illegal alien gangs like Trende Aragua, etc. Pivoting over to the Montana legislature with the legislative session underway right now, what are some of the priorities that FWP is looking at, and what are some of the bills that are catching your eye thus far?
Well, we just finished up a week of budget presentation. We were in the budget hearing in Section C all week with the staff. And we are asking for some increase in FTEs, full-time employees. We need a little more support in enforcement. We could use more game wardens, more boots on the ground. We're also looking for enhancements into our hunter education program. Our ComEd, it's called Communications and Education of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. And that's an area that is just under increasingly more pressure. You know, we're having to turn down schools that want to come and tour Montana Wild, or, you know, there's a whole variety of things that this part of the agency does that people aren't really aware of. But once they figure it out, it's such an important tool. And they're just always looking to inspire and increase awareness about outdoors, whether that's engaging schools or it's engaging families. And so we're asking for a little bit more support there. And then enhancing our hunter education. That's such an important part of what we do to train, you know, new hunters, teach them skills, teach them, you know, the fair chase practices, the things that make, you know, hunting in Montana so spectacular. And that's one area that we're really focusing on enhancing. The other bills that we're watching, we've got a handful of red tape relief bills, as many do. But we're also really watching for bills that might threaten our grizzly bear management plan, anything that would maybe go too far. We are still very hopeful that the grizzly bears will be delisted. So we're keeping a careful eye out on that while we move some of our agenda items forward. I mean, it's simple things like, you know, allowing parents to carry their kids' hunting licenses on their phones. You know, we're about 40% e-tags now in the state. And so just little simple things that really encourage, you know, families to be able to recreate and enjoy Montana's outdoors.
That would be nice, especially since the hunting and fishing license doesn't really fit into those nice little waterproof plastic little baggies like they used to. So that would be nice to just say, hey, here it is. It's on my phone. Good to go.
Yes.
Fred in the Flathead actually messaged us on the Montana Talks app. You mentioned needing more game wardens. And so he has sounds like a good idea here. Remove the requirement for a bachelor's degree for game wardens. Fred says, our son is a cattle rancher and an outdoorsman. His ranching skills alone are worth more than most any degree. So I thought that was a good idea from Fred in the Flathead. Hunter safety, hunters education programs. Is it tough getting volunteers right now? Cascade County Sheriff Jesse Slaughter testified on another bill earlier this week, and he just said, unfortunately, volunteerism is dead. It's just hard to get volunteers for anything.
You know, that's right. Well, and going back to Fred, that is funny because that is the second time I heard that within 2 days. And it is something that I think we do need to take a look at for game wardens. I think we expect an awfully lot of them. And I think that is something we can go back and take a look at. Yes, as far as hunters education, we are in desperate need of volunteers. You know, COVID threw us all for a loop, and we ended up, you know, having to move a lot of stuff online. And when you do that, you just lose engagement. And I think it's probably not just Hunter's education, but we've lost engagement of volunteers just across, you know, across so many different spectrums. And so we are actively seeking more more Hunter's education instructor volunteers. If anybody out there listening that thinks they might want to be a Hunter's Ed instructor, please go to our website, click on Hunt, and then click on Hunter Education. And we're asking for a few more full-time employees to train those volunteers.
All right.
We have moved somewhat online, but we still do require some in-person.
Some in-person stuff, yeah. Well, great update. Yeah. We got to hit the hard break here. Director Clark, appreciate your time. Thanks so much for being with us.
All right, thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.
Serving the great state of Montana, from the peaks of the Beartooths to the banks of the Clark Fork River, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Well, we got a great lineup of guests for you here on this Friday. So the other day, a little background here. So the other day I was chatting with some friends over a nice cigar, I might add. But anyway, I was chatting with some friends, and my friend Greg Frank says to me, he says, Aaron, we got to start talking about the Stillwater mine again and what we can do, especially with this new administration, to get that mine back up and running. And I totally agree. And I said, actually, earlier this week, I actually mentioned a story, a great story, by the way. I mentioned, you know, the Bozeman Daily Chronicle is starting to do some real journalism again. They're making some changes, but I talked about this story briefly earlier in the week. Canary in the coal mine. Lawmakers and mining firm want the United States to ban Russian palladium. And so, and then, you know, it talked in here about how Congressman Ryan Zinke is looking at legislation to do that very thing, and potentially more to try to help get the Stillwater mine back up and running. Well, but then, you know, we ended up having this conversation. Okay, well, even if we ban Russian palladium, where do we refine our palladium? And so I did a quick AI search using Grok, and a lot of it is refined in Columbus, but then where does it go for further refinement from there? So I send a quick message on LinkedIn to Heather McDowell, the senior vice president for legal affairs for the Stillwater Mine, and she says, it goes to Pennsylvania. Boom, I got a response right back. I was like, hey, that's pretty cool. Anyway, great to have Heather McDowell in the house with us right now. Thanks for joining us in studio.
Thank you so much, Aaron. I'm very sorry that I missed the cigars, but I'm happy I could be here today. And I really appreciate this call to action. I do think that's what we need. So we are operating the Stillwater and the East Boulder mines and the Stillwater and the East Boulder valleys. We have a metallurgical complex where we're doing the smelting and some of the refining of platinum and palladium. We are the only U.S. producer of platinum and palladium in a primary form, in a mine form. And we need this call to action. We have been price takers in global commodities markets for our entire existence. We started operating the Stillwater mine in 1986, the East Boulder mine in 2001. And we've really been through the ups and downs and through the cycles, and we're in a really, really bad place now. We unfortunately laid off 40% of our workforce in November. It's a really sad, it's a sad state in our valleys because we're really interconnected with our communities. We really do believe that as our communities go, so do we. We get a lot of great support from our communities. We have a collaborative relationship with Northern Plains and the Good Neighbor Agreement, which has really enabled us to go forward without environmental litigation like most mining companies. And so, you know, we're in a good spot that other mining companies are not in, but now we're in a down commodities cycle. And I think it's very easy to say, well, that's just how it is. You know, I grew up on a ranch. It's a lot like the cattle market. It's just a down cycle. We have to hunker down. We have to wait through it. But I really think here we have to do those things. We have to hunker down and get through it. But we really need a call to action because I think we can really shift the paradigm for how we are paid for critical minerals. So there's 50 critical minerals, 50 elements on the periodic table that are deemed critical minerals by the Department of Interior. And platinum and palladium, platinum group metals, PGMs are solidly on that list. Unfortunately, there's only like 7 or 8 of those, actually those 50 actually being produced in the United States. And so the fact that we are producing platinum and palladium at our mines, we also have a huge recycle operation. So we take spent catalytic converters. They come from a few nationwide and a couple of global customers. They bring them in big sort of feed sacks crushed up, and we put them in our smelter. And over the last 10 years, we've actually produced more platinum and palladium from recycle. And we also get a little bit of rhodium from our recycle operations. But platinum, palladium, and rhodium are some of the very, very few critical minerals actually then refined in the U.S. Like you said, our material goes to a company called Johnson Matthey. It fully refines our platinum and palladium from the 68th percentile that we send it from Columbus, and it takes it to the 99%, and it's used in catalytic converters. It makes catalytic converters.
It was always just beyond me that, you know, here you had, you know, Russia invade Ukraine under the Biden presidency. And it was like, why didn't we defund their effort, you know, by, you know, boosting American energy production, boosting American mineral production? And so when Montanans find out that we had got this devastating news that the Stillwater mine shut down, and we all have friends and some family that worked out there. And it's like, wait a minute, why are we allowing the Russians to you know, dump their palladium into America, and then now we're seeing our own American jobs go under? And so that's why I think it's good to hear this news that, like, hey, we can mine it here, you can refine it down into the cake in Columbus, and then it goes to Pennsylvania for the final refinement there, you know. And that's incredible, and because we're so dependent on critical minerals from China right now, so many supplies that our military needs, and we're dependent on China right now. And it just seems like we have got to change the, as you said, the paradigm and the conversation here, because energy security is national security, mineral security is national security. And I know that's something President Trump is highly focused on right now.
So we need this call to action. About 45% of the global palladium is coming from Russia. Russia imported to the United States just under $1 billion worth of palladium. And I talk primarily about palladium because we're 78% palladium, 22% platinum. And the palladium price is the thing that shifted over the years. So that's the variable that matters to us. But we can absolutely do this call to action. Senator Daines is working very hard on a bill to ban Russian palladium. In the last Congress, all 4 of our Montana delegates actually introduced bills to ban Russian palladium. Obviously, those bills died when that Congress closed, but now Senator Daines is working on this bill and getting ready to introduce it. And we've talked to our other delegates as well. Palladium is now the single thing of greatest value, at least from the numbers we've seen, coming into the U.S. totally unfettered. So there's no restrictions. There's no tariffs, duties. It's, you know, and I think this really would have a huge impact in our operations. So as you said, we did have to shut down the west side, the older side of our Stillwater mine. We're still operating the east side of the Stillwater mine. We're still running the East Boulder mine. We're going to produce about 400,000 ounces of platinum and palladium from our mining operations this year. Hopefully we'll produce about that much from recycle, but we really have to shift how these markets work, because I think if we hunker down, the problem is that we're doing this the right way. If anybody drives up there, I think we're proud of how we operate. We have a union workforce. We're proud of that. We're paying prevailing wages to our remaining 1,050 employees, and we're doing it right from an environmental standpoint. We feel strongly about doing that.
Most people, if they drove by, they wouldn't even know that there was this incredible mine that was there. They would think, oh, well, there's this, I wonder what business that is. There's like, you know, this, there's a building here, but they wouldn't even know.
That's the biggest compliment, I think, when people say on a Monday morning, you know, especially in the summer, they have a great weekend of fishing and recreating up at Woodbine or Sea Charlie, and they say, hey, Heather, I think I drove by the mine. And I think to myself, yes, okay, good job, guys. You're doing a great job. But, you know, really,
I think I drove by the mine because it's not
this massive eyesore, right?
Yeah,
we can do mining right. If you look at the Russian mines, I mean, you can see the palladium producing facilities from space. You can just go Google NASA satellite of palladium operations in Russia, you'll see the huge scar. I mean, it's exactly how you shouldn't do mining. You can imagine
just
what they're
paying
people.
Just like China with lithium and other
stuff, right?
Exactly right.
I mean, you can see them from space, right?
Well, yeah.
The problem is, it's a lot cheaper to do it that rate, right? When you operate like we do and you have the best controlled smelter in the world, we emitted less than a half a ton of sulfur dioxide last year.
And you take better care of your employees than they would
absolutely.
Over there.
And so we can do it that way. The problem is, it costs more to do it that way, right? And then if you subject our fungible product, it's an element on the periodic table. It looks just like the Russian palladium. It has to. It's an element on the periodic table. And if there's not any incentive or protection for the way that we produce it here in the U.S., it's going to be difficult to compete. I think everyone has to understand if we want it produced to our standards so that it can be circular, we can keep doing it. We're recycling our own product that we mined in the 80s and 90s right now. It's coming back as recycle.
So the tax situation got fixed in the last session of Congress, and I think, you know, so that got fixed, but yet imports of Russian palladium are still in effect right now. If, you know, either Trump makes it happen or the congressional delegation makes it happen through legislation one way or another, if we ban that and the price starts to rebound, how soon could the mine potentially get back up to running and rehire some of these employees?
Yeah, well, we have to get back to running. I mean, when we talk about getting our costs down, the best way to do that is through volume. Our costs are essentially fixed. Half of our costs are people, and we want half of our costs to be people. We want to pay people well. But in the third quarter, the last reported results we have, the third quarter of 2024, we produced platinum and palladium together at $1,274 an ounce. The basket price that we sold it for those two elements, was just under $1,000. So you can do the math. You know, our goal at our operations is to get our costs down to $1,000 an ounce. And we're working hard to do that. The operational teams have done the most amazing job. So much credit to folks who have worked very safely through this very stressful time. And they've really done a lot to essentially get more ounces per labor hour is what we're working to do. But we really, as soon as we can do that, as soon as the market will come back above, you know, kind of that, if we can get it into the 1300, 1350 range, I mean, that looks really good for us, right?
Yeah, that's great. So about a minute to go before we go to our break. But if Montanans wanted to call their congressional delegation today, I mean, I guess would a good message be, hey, call them and tell them you support their efforts to ban Russian palladium and to get our Stillwater mine back up and running? Is that a good summary, I guess?
Yeah, absolutely. And we could not have gotten better support from our congressional delegation. I mean, it is the magic. I mean, the joy of living in a state like Montana or being in a city like Billings is that you have access to the people making the decisions, right? And they care about you and they know about you. And I think the more effort we can put into this call to action, it'll make a huge difference. And I do think, you know, it's tough when you look at this congressional makeup. Can we get a bill to pass? But something like this, it really can appeal to both sides. It is absolutely the right thing to do from a social responsibility and environmental responsibility standpoint. And it's the right thing to do from a national security standpoint.
That's so right. Mineral security
there,
is national security.
It
All right.
is, yeah.
We got to hit the break. Thank you so much for joining us.
This is where Montana Talks At with Lane Nordlund.
Cattle Convention 2025 is officially wrapped up in San Antonio, Texas. A lot of work went into the creation of policy to help set a direction for the future of the cattle industry. Leslie Robinson, president of the Montana Stock Growers Association, shared with us some of the policy put forward at convention this year from Montana.
One of the things that we brought to this convention was a directive to state specifically in the strategic plan, the NCBA strategic plan, to keep agriculture land in production. And that seems like a simple phrase, but I think that we need to, for sustainability of the beef industry and for food safety for our nation, is so important to keep agriculture land in production.
That directive passed out of committee. As for cattle prices,
With the prices, it's great because we have just a little bit more breathing room. And with the new administration, I think we're going to see, I'm hoping we'll see some rollbacks on some of the regulations that were placed in the last administration. And And we'll, I guess we'll see, but I'm optimistic, and I sleep a lot better.
Speaking of prices, Cattle Facts yesterday projected the price for a 550-pound steer calf to average $3.40 a pound this year. That's up $29 from last year. I'm Lane Northland.
Taking your calls live. 406-294-0970. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, let's see. Hey, you know what? Let's sneak in a random phone call here. I know we're packed with guests joining us here on the show, and it's not too often we pack this show full of guests, but we've got great guests here for the full hour. But before we get to our next guest, let's see. We've got Mike in Bozeman on the phone lines. Mike, what did you want to share with our statewide audience? Thanks for calling in.
It has to do with Christopher Wray and his intermittent visitation with Congress telling us how bad things were regarding the border and dangers of bad guys in the country. I want to know what was in it for him besides a paycheck, that he didn't jump up on Biden's desk, scream in his face, kick his coffee cup over, and tell him he's going to quit or else he's going to have to fire himself because of the dangers that Biden was allowing to come into this country. And if Ray had any ethics and had any patriotism, why in the hell he didn't do something within the capability of his office in terms of power that he could exert to stop, slow down, or if not change the situation with the border crossing.
Not so just him, but anybody in the federal government. How could anybody? I mean, unfortunately, we needed people to sit back, lay low, stay quiet in the midst of outrage after outrage that took place during the Biden administration, right? We needed some people to throw their rank on the table and say, that is it. After the disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan, after the invasion on our southern border, somebody needed to throw their rank on the table and say, you know what? Somebody's got to say something. But we also needed other people to just lay low, keep their heads down, and serve as the stay-behind element, right? Because, like, take our Border Patrol, for example. They're kicking butt and taking names right now across northwest Montana. They're arresting illegal aliens, and then ICE. If all those men and women quit because of the obvious, call it what you want, treason, just the shameful actions of the last administration, who would there be to go out and now finally start securing our border, right? So it's tough. But, yeah, I'm with you. For somebody like Chris Wray, the former FBI director, to testify that there's blinking lights everywhere, there's threats everywhere, holy cow, it's crazy. Well, why don't you go, like Mike and Bozeman just said there, why don't you go to the White House and speak your mind unfiltered to the then president of the United States? Then again, would Joe have even known, or would he have just been wandering around the White House waiting for the next instruction from Susan Rice? You know, so would it have even done anything if the FBI director went to Biden and said, sir, you've got to change this, you've got to change that? I mean, Joe Biden probably like, oh, what's that you say? Oh, what, when's breakfast? Who was even running the show there? All right, hey, thanks for the call. All right, well, let's jump into it. Our next guest on the phone lines, great young man out of Missoula, Montana. In fact, I'm going to sound like the old man here. I'm going to be like, yeah, I knew your dad back in the day 24 now, I think. I was a student at the University of Montana, and anyway, got to know his dad and his mom in the meantime as well. Great family. Finley Warden is back on the show with us here. Finley, thanks for calling in this morning.
Hey, Aaron. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
So I was calling in to talk about, so last October, I went undercover at the Montana Federation of Public Employees annual teachers conference where teachers are required to do their professional development training. And this was held in Bozeman, where teachers from all over the state drove in to do their required professional development. And beforehand, before the conference happened, they posted the list of all their sessions online. And as many people across the state saw, there were some incredibly woke and radical things that were being taught at this conference. But I actually went undercover to it and saw firsthand what was being taught.
Yeah, some people may remember back in late November, we had a guest on the show, Max Nelson with the Freedom Foundation, and he put together a big report, Montana Taxpayers Foot the Bill for Woke Politics at Teachers Union Conference. So this was like anti-American nonsense. It was LGBTQ plus promotion that they want to, you know, push on kids. In one instance, I think they were even instructing teachers on how they can get around Montana laws. But Max Nelson with the Freedom Foundation wrote a big report on what was listed online, what was publicly available from the agenda itself. You actually were inside the meetings. You got to hear it. You got to see it firsthand. What was the most shocking to you?
So the main thing was there was a session called the LGBTQ State of the State, which was given by an out-of-state presenter that they flew in, and it was basically a whole overview for teachers on how to, quote-unquote, teach to queer kids. And the main things that were went over in that is how to introduce yourself using pronouns to your students, how to get around parental rights to transition students in the classroom or change their pronouns without parental permission. And the worst thing of all is there was the promotion of a document called the Gender Unicorn, which is a handout meant for, like, kindergartners to third graders that teaches kids that, like, their gender, that their sexuality is just this completely arbitrary thing that can be changed at any time. And it's a handout where you can choose your gender and choose your sexuality. And this is meant for kindergartners.
Wow. And so they were doing this. This is the MFPE, the Montana Federation of Public Employees, very radical left-wing led union. The teachers' unions, they used to fall under the MEA, MFT, but then they basically ended that and merged with the MFPE. So the radical left-wing MFPE is what hosted this and is pushing this radical left-wing woke agenda where, yeah, I mean, how outrageous. Imagine if you were a parent and you were told that basically now your little boy wants to get his body parts chopped off, wants to start identifying as a girl, and you found out that a school official was the one encouraging this and provoking this whole thing and trying to push this on your kids. And they attended a teachers union conference where they were instructed on how to go around Montana law protecting against that very sort of thing.
Yeah, that's right. And just to reiterate, it's illegal to do that in Montana. We have laws against transitioning students in the classroom. So they're outright breaking the law with this.
Yeah, wow. Well, I would love it. I know the legislature's got a lot going on, and it's a fast-moving 90-day session, but I would love it if somebody, or this could even be done on an interim committee. I think the legislature should conduct a full investigation of what took place and what this MFPE might be continuing to try to do. So I can just imagine you sitting in one of these sessions. You talk about going undercover, and here you are. Did you ever watch Matt Walsh from The Daily Wire? Matt Walsh, his film, Am I Racist? And he sat in on some of these woke, anti-racism is what they called it, sessions. And it was just hysterical. It was hilarious as he was sitting in. It was like an Alcoholics Anonymous session, but it was for all these white people to apologize for their whiteness, and he played right into it. I could just imagine, because didn't they like ask you at the start of the session, okay, tell us who you are and tell us what your pronouns are?
Yeah, that's exactly how I felt. I decided I'd actually play into it a little bit. when they went around and like were asking for everyone's pronouns, I thought I'd try to fit in. So I said I used they, them pronouns just to see what the reaction would be. So.
Oh, man. It sounded like there might have been some other people that were sitting in on that, too, that were kind of like, okay, I'm just here for the crazy. I'm just here to see what kind of crazy stuff they're putting forward. But you never know.
Yeah, there were definitely a few teachers that were probably not on board with what was going on. But that was a minority. I'd say the vast majority of the teachers there were either indifferent or completely on board to what was being taught in those sessions.
So, I guess a number of different questions, one of which would be, so you definitely got the impression that some of the teachers that attended this woke teachers conference, that they very much were on board with the idea that they were willing to violate Montana law to push this LGBTQ agenda on the kids. About 20 seconds to go before the break, but you would say that that's exactly what you saw firsthand?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Many of the teachers in this LGBTQ state were the activist teachers that we hear about working to transition students to school and not focusing on educating students.
Very interesting. All right, Finley Warden, hold that thought. We'll come back to you right after this.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Oh, man, we just got a great message on the Montana Talks app. This came in from Jasmine in Glendive. Jasmine tells us this, by the way, 1 week from today, the Montana cattlewomen in Glendive, the cowbells will be serving lunch at the Gate Show, the Glendive Agri-Trade Expo, on Friday, February 14th and Saturday, February 15th. We will have our famous hot beef sandwiches. I can't wait. We will be there. Jasmine, we're looking forward to seeing you and the whole crew there. For the Gate Show, yeah, I try to get there every single year. Unless I've been deployed overseas, I try to get to the Gate Show every year. We will be there once again with Montana Talks, broadcasting live from the Gate Show 1 week from today. So we'll see you there, and looking forward to those famous hot beef sandwiches and seeing our friends, the Sturlogsons, and so many other good friends. Come down and see us. We'll have open microphones for you and catching up with the folks from the Gate Show as well for that show in Glendive. All right, back to Finley Warden here joining us on the phone lines talking about this crazy woke agenda. And this is really just some incredible investigative reporting that Finley Warden is doing here. And Finley, you're still a college student and everything, and yet here you are doing the type of investigative journalism that the so-called journalists should actually be doing. And yet I think they've ignored this story. I mean, Max Nelson put that report out from the Freedom Foundation, and I don't know if anybody else in the media even covered this story, because they're the ones that also push this crazy woke agenda, too.
Yeah, well, we really need to start paying more attention to what's going on in our state, specifically around the teachers' union. No one besides me in the whole state had even the thought to go undercover at this thing and see what our teachers are being taught.
So you went to the LGBTQ plus indoctrination session at the MFPE Teachers Conference. This was, I think it was in Bozeman, right? If I remember back in October. Did you sit in on any of the other sessions? Because Max Nelson, he kind of summarized it. It was like a whole gamut of woke issues du jour, historical activism, countering purported book banning, eco schools, equity training, fighting microaggression at the workplace. Another one was indigenous pedagogy, and then implementing DEI trainings, which is also racist and is against civil rights law in Montana. But here they were pushing that. So did you go to any of these other sessions?
I did. I didn't have time to go to all of them because lots of them were overlapping in time. But I did go to the microaggression one. And in that presentation, they were going over all of the list of little micro things that teachers could do to possibly offend their students or other teachers and how they can avoid them. And it was just a whole list of crazy things and how we need to constantly be policing our language. And, yeah, it was crazy.
Interesting. Yeah. Do you remember any of the particular, like, microaggressions, like, that they were lecturing teachers? Well, don't say this, don't do that.
Yeah, well, one of them that really stuck out was apparently it's a microaggression for a male principal to ask female teachers to show up to work dressed nice. So...
So you could show up in your PJs, yep. Whatever, you know, why use deodorant? You know what I mean? Just show up, whatever. And yeah, but if a principal were to say something to you, that's a microaggression.
Yeah. And another thing, Aaron, in the Senate right now, there's a bill, it's SB 94, and it's going to be voted on the Senate floor most likely next week. It's gotten out of committee. But it is a bill that will prevent public money, our taxpayer money, from going to fund public labor union events like this. So I encourage everyone listening to your show to reach out to your state senator about SB 94 to make sure that we get this bill passed.
That's right. And I think there's other states that are moving. I think I saw a headline out of Wyoming, I think, where they're looking to do the same thing. But yeah, this that makes absolute sense. I think it was Tim and Savage who made this point before. Look, a lot of teachers are choosing not to even go to this MFPE crap anymore because of this type of nonsense. So a lot of them are just choosing not to even go to these things. But for those that do, you're free to do it. Like you've got, you know, the right and free speech to go to whatever conference you want to go to. But don't expect the rest of us taxpayers to pay for it. Right. So SB 94. Thanks for getting that one on our radar. Finley Warden, great to have you on the show. We got about a minute to go. Anything else you want to tell folks across Montana?
Yeah, I just want to reiterate that we need to pay way more closer attention to what's going on in our schools in Montana, specifically everything going on with the teachers union and MFPE. If we had more people looking at them and tracking them, then they'll be scared and they won't want to do things that are damaging to students. Currently, they're unopposed in everything they're doing, and we need to stand up against them.
All right, Finley Warden, appreciate your time. Great reporting. Tell your mom and dad hi from one older fella to another. Yeah, what a great family. Yeah, appreciate your time. Thanks for being with us. Keep with it. Keep at it with the investigative reporting as well, and it would be great to have you on the show from time to time. All right, have a great weekend. And, yes, another reminder, 1 week from today, Montana Talks broadcasting live from Glendive and the Glendive Agri-Trade Exposition. Looking forward to seeing all of you there. Our producer, Caden's coming too. Montana.